Well, hi everybody and welcome. I'm Art Subcheck. In this webinar, we're going to focus solely on objections and resistance in your sales process and how you can address them successfully without using those goofy sounding rebuttals or sounding like a jerk. First, a couple of quick answers to questions. Yes, you are getting a recording of this program, which you will likely want to go through a few times because I'm going to speak quickly and cover lots of word-for-word techniques. And yes, you will get a written transcript of the electronic PDF of it, actually, so you can see the many examples and just copy them or preferably adapt them. Regarding questions during this program, I might have time for a few of them at the end. If you want, you could submit those through your Q&A window over to the right, or you can just submit them to me after the program. Okay, so you could just email those to me at smartcalling@gmail.com. All right, let's get going here. There's been a lot of nonsense taught over the years about sales in general, and much of it has to do with objections and how to deal with them. So some of the garbage you might have heard: selling doesn't start until an objection has been voiced. Oh, you gotta love objections to be successful in sales. Well, after the third objection is when you usually get the sale. Whenever I hear crap like that, I just shake my head. See, what's scary is that there are people who actually believe some of that nonsense. If the selling didn't start until you heard an objection, what were you doing up until that point? Why not just start out the call with, okay, what's your objection? Come on, let's hear it. Yeah, right. Love objections? If I love something, I want more of it. As for objections, I prefer to never hear another one since they're really a sign that something broke down in the sales process up to that point, right? So no objections would really mean perfection. Now, we're never going to reach that, but we should always try to get closer to it than the alternative. Actually, you want to know the best way to deal with objections? How about this? Prevent them from coming up in the first place. Most objections are created by salespeople who talk too much. Think about it. If you didn't mention something that they did not want, you would not hear an objection, would you? I know that wasn't grammatically correct. There were a lot of negatives in there, but it's true. So the most important point is, let's focus on asking questions before we present, and then we're going to minimize objections. All right, I know, but the reality is that we're always going to be faced with resistance, and how we deal with it determines our success and the height of our attitude. Now, many sales reps either give up upon the first sign of resistance or react adversarially, putting on the gloves to defend their own position, and neither one of those is a good strategy. Because think about it, if we give up, we potentially are missing an opportunity that still might be present, but there's a problem that needs to be addressed. But we got to address it professionally. Now, the problem with a lot of conventional sales training on objections is that it focuses on responding to an objection with a canned answer. And there are a couple serious flaws in that approach. First, when you hear an objection, you are not hearing the problem, you're hearing a symptom. Think about the objections you hear. For any objection you hear, there could be 5 or 10 possible reasons for someone voicing that objection. And if you come back with one answer, it's likely you're not addressing their real concern. It's like if you went to the doctor with a headache and he or she immediately prescribed, brain surgery. That probably would not be treating the real problem, would it? Now, the other flaw with using a canned answer is that it simply tells someone that they're wrong. One thing I learned from years of playing baseball and then coaching my kids' boys' baseball and girls' softball teams, and this is really common sense, but it's not practiced by most people, is that umpires don't like to be told they're wrong. Hey, tell an umpire that a pitch was a strike when he or she called it a ball. Well, I can guarantee you they don't reply with, hey, you know what? You're right. Thanks for pointing that out. I'll change that call. Or if you tell them pretty passionately that they just blew the call at first base, well, they might appreciate your opinion so much that sometimes they insist that you leave the field. Not saying I know that from experience. Okay, so that makes sense, doesn't it? When's the last time someone thanked you for telling them they were flat out wrong? Doesn't happen, does it? Now, even though everyone resents being told they're wrong, often getting defensive in the process, most sales training suggests that you do just that. Counter objections and resistance with these slick canned rebuttals with insidious names like the boomerang technique. And basically just, again, tells them they're wrong and makes them feel like dirt. I was in line at the local Barnes and Noble with a few books to purchase, and the counter guy started to process a transaction. And he asked me the question that I heard him ask the three people that were checking out in front of me. And he said, "Do you have one of our discount cards?" And I replied, "No." And he said, "Well, it's a card that we sell for $25 annually. It gives you 10% off your purchases." Now, being the math wizard that I am, I calculated that the break even on that card would be $250 worth of purchases yearly. And I might already spend that at Barnes and Noble, but I also buy a ton from Amazon, kind of addicted, actually, and whatever airport bookstore I might wander into when I'm on the road. So I already decided that I wasn't going to get one. And I was in a huge hurry, plus there were plenty of people behind me. I didn't want to hold up the line, be that guy. So he actually asked the question. He said, "Would you like to get one?" I said, "Nah, thanks. I'll pass this time." Then he used it, the goofy objection rebuttal technique. "Well, of course you like to save money, don't you?" My first unspoken reaction was to say, and of course you want me to reach across the counter and smack you in the head, don't you?" No, I'm not a violent guy. I wouldn't do that. So instead, I just smiled and asked him to ring up the books. Then, as he was bagging up the purchase, he added, "It's a good deal if you buy a lot." Well, at least he was persistent. So I told him I was capable of doing the math. All right, so here's a key point. You're never going to change anyone's mind by preaching at them. For example, think about some beliefs you feel pretty strongly about. Something political, particularly right now, people have some pretty strong political beliefs. Something moral, favorite sports team. If someone simply started refuting everything you believed in, you'd likely strengthen your stance and think of why the other person is wrong, wouldn't you? So what we can do, however, is help someone to first doubt their beliefs, which is the initial hurdle in even just starting to opening them up to your ideas. So we've got to get them to question their position first regarding their belief and your offer or ideas. People are going to believe more of their ideas than they do yours. That's common sense, right? You can't tell them they're wrong and expect success. But what we can do is help them to doubt their perceptions, which causes them to lower their guard and at least be open to what we have to say. So we do this with doubt-creating questions. Okay, then. So what should we do? Well, here's what we will do on this webinar. We're going to go through a process for identifying the reasons behind the objections you hear, and then we're going to work on how to create doubt in the mind of the objector so they can perhaps start to at least be open to your side of the story. And then later, we're going to look at other forms of resistance that you might hear, such as, "Oh, let me think about it. We don't need that." And finally, I'm going to end with a lot more tips and techniques on resistance and objections that you can use right away. All right now, we're going to go through that process, and I suggest you follow this for all of the common objections that you hear. And this process is going to provide you with ways to, first of all, understand the reasons behind the objections that you hear, and then you're going to develop questions that will be designed to help them doubt those beliefs. And again, that's the initial hurdle in opening them up to your ideas. And then what you're going to do is anticipate the possible answers you might hear from them in response to your questions, and then you're going to continue that process. So when you work on this, it's going to be as if you're role-playing the possible scenarios that you might run into so that you're going to be prepared for them when you're on your calls. Now, when I do my in-person training sessions, and I know some of you on the call have been in some of those, we do this as a workshop activity where I give you time to actually write out these responses in each of these areas. It does take some time. time that we don't have right now. So I'm going to present the process to you. So please do take notes on it. Then I suggest you do it either alone or as part of your sales team to collaborate. Now, don't worry if you don't get everything, since you're going to get the replay of this as well as the transcript as soon as it's done. And I did get a question here. The question is, could I give you my slides as well? Well, that wasn't part of the deal, but I'll tell you what, if you guys would like the slides as well, go ahead and type that into the question box. Go ahead and type in, heck yeah, we'll give us the slides. Anybody want the slides? I don't see that yet. Anybody want the slides? Yes, yeah, slides, please. Nice. Okay, now they're coming in. All right, you persuaded me. Yeah, you guys are persuasive salespeople. All right, we'll give you the slides. That'll be on the replay page as well. All right, so let's get into this. Here's the first step in the process. Pretty difficult, huh? Write out your common objection. I'm talking about something you might hear deep into a sales process. After you've asked the questions, made a recommendation, this is a real roadblock in their mind, something that's stopping them. This is not right at the beginning of a prospecting call where you hear, I'm not interested. We are going to deal with that one a little bit later. I'm talking about the real objections that you encounter. Okay, I'm sure you have a few of those. We all do. All right, so that's the first step in the process. Step two in the process. List the possible reasons people have for stating that objection. We've got to understand why we hear these objections. And as part of that process, what I like to do is think about, why would someone say this? Where are they coming from? It could be a symptom of their lack of complete and accurate information. Maybe they just don't have enough information about what we're presenting, therefore they object. Maybe they misunderstand what we presented. Maybe they just didn't get it. Maybe it's an emotional stance that could be illogical. For example, let's say that you're clearly the better choice, but they say, well, you know what? I want to really deal with somebody local. I know it costs more, but I want to keep the business local. Now, clearly that could be illogical, but it could be very real to them. And by the way, we can deal with that. Or maybe it could be your misunderstanding of what they want. This happens in cases where salespeople don't ask enough questions. So they present something, it's not on target, somebody objects. Or finally, it could be a genuine problem they have with buying from you. And it could be a case where there's just not a fit right now. Okay, well, hey, you're not going to get all of them if it's not a fit. But we will talk about how to salvage something from that one as well. Here's one you might get. You ever heard this? Your price is too high. So what does that mean? Does that mean they can get it cheaper down the street? Or do they have a predetermined price figure in mind? Or did they not have enough money in the budget? We've got to know their rationale, which is the real problem, before we can address the symptom, the objection that we hear. I had a guy send me an email and he said, it was on your website, $300 for the set of CDs? That's way too much money. I went to a convention and their sales CDs aren't priced that much. So I thought, well, clearly the guy's not comparing apples to apples here. So I was kind of in a playful mood and I called him back. And during the conversation, I said, well, you know what? If you just want a CDs, I can get you some at Best Buy. They're really cheap. And then, of course, we laughed about it and went on. And we talked a little bit more about what he really wanted, which was the content, of course, on the CDs. So that guy had a predetermined price figure in mind for CDs. And they thought, well, that's what they should cost. So then we started figuring out, what did he really want? All right. So the next step then, after we come up with those possible reasons, is to come up with questions that start creating doubt in their mind. We want them to question their position regarding our offer or ideas and their problem or pain. People believe their ideas much more than they do ours. We can't tell them they're wrong and expect success, but we can help them to doubt their perceptions, which causes them to lower their guard a little bit and at least be open to what we have to say. So consider this. In order for someone to change their mind, including you, people need to go through this process where they first have to look at their belief and say, well, maybe there is another way to look at this. Then they begin softening their position to a point where they might at least be open to considering other options. And the way we do this is with these doubt-creating questions. So here's how. So for each of the objection reasons you came up with, every one, I want you to write out questions that help to uncover their rationale and then also begins planting seeds of doubt. Well, let's take the price is too high objection. So for example, some initial questions might be, okay, well, are we talking about the price itself or the long-term value? Or tell me, what are we being compared to? Well, what price figure did you feel would be appropriate for what you're looking to receive? Well, let's take price out of the picture for a moment. Do you like this unit better than any other one that you've seen? Now, again, we're just really scratching the surface here. Here's one of my all-time favorites, by the way. Oh, could you explain that for me? Because again, we're just hearing the symptom. We've got to figure out, where are they coming from? What are they thinking? What is the why? What's causing them to say what they do? Let's look at a specific situation. Say a wholesale supplier is trying to persuade a retailer to carry his product. And the retail customer says, hey, we don't need to stock any more lines. Of course, the wrong response would be the canned objection rebuttal, coming back with market share facts and figures that would prove the retailer wrong, but not change their mind, right? A doubt-creating approach would use questions perhaps like these. Oh, I see. Well, how often in the past month have people called and asked for this type of product and you weren't able to provide it? Or in what situations have you been in where someone called and asked about a product like this, but they didn't come in because they found you didn't have it? So you could see that these are all questions designed to get them thinking in a different way. And of course, these are all prepared in advance. And you could see that they're really, again, designed to get them thinking about the problem that you're pretty sure that they're experiencing. Okay, so then the next step in this process is you're just kind of role-playing in your mind. It takes some time, but it's well worth it since it prepares you to deal with whatever might be thrown at you. And again, it's taking the time, then taking the questions that you just developed, anticipating those possible responses, then developing your next response, and then continuing that process. So you might imagine this can get rather involved and look like a computer programmer's flowchart. Precisely. So here's your homework after this program. Anticipate the answers to the questions you created earlier. Create your next question. Continue. You might need several sheets of paper or a big old whiteboard. So please do take your time and put lots of thought into this. All right. So after you've done this, you've created lots of questions and responses. And the final step will be for you to study those and ideally pair up, role play them with a partner so you're going to be smooth when you do hear them. All right, so to review this process here, again, you're going to write out a common objection, list out those possible reasons, develop the questions to create doubt, and then anticipate those answers and your next questions. I can tell you, when you do this exercise, it helps you to prepare for and address objections in a non-adversarial, conversational way. Helps you to ask questions to root out the reasons, to plant those seeds of doubt. And then really the byproduct is it's opening them up to considering your ideas and therefore softening their resistance and hopefully ultimately seeing your point of view. So now let's plug this into the process. So I'm going to go through just a very simple process here for using these doubt-creating questions. And I'll share a number of how-to tips and phrases that you can use in dealing with that resistance and objections in a variety of different situations. Okay, so the very first step after hearing the objection is a softening statement. What we don't want to do when we hear resistance is give them the impression that we're going to start arguing with them. So therefore, it's good to let them know that you're going to be conversational with them. For example, after hearing an objection, you could say, oh, I see. Well, I understand. Not a problem. Or let's talk about that. Let's discuss that. Well, that's an interesting point. Let me make sure I've got a good understanding of it. Tell me more about that. I'm pretty sure I can answer that. Let's go through some of the reasons behind it. Or let's address that question. Okay, I can see that. So you can see how this eases any tension that might be present, puts them in a frame of mind where they're more open to answering your questions. This is actually so simple, a fourth grader could do it. I know that as a fact because one did with me. I was attending a fundraising dinner as part of a celebrity golf tournament for Arizona youth baseball here, and it was really kind of cool. I got to meet a few Hall of Fame Major League Baseball players. And during the dinner, the kids were working the crowd selling raffle tickets. Now, I already purchased five $20 tickets at the door, but a fourth grader, and as I later found out, who was in Little League, it was a fourth grade girl. Came to our table very confidently, asked, "Sir, would you like to buy some raffle tickets?" And I smiled and told her that, "No, I already had mine." And yeah, I was actually impressed. These kids were approaching adults and asking for money, although I'm sure they do it to their parents all the time. I know mine still do, and they're grown. So I tried to be as gentle as possible in saying no. I said, "Oh, no, thanks. I already bought some." And she looked at me with these big, beautiful blue eyes, and she smiled in this very soft tone said, "That's okay." And I didn't know what to say. She totally disarmed me. I said, "Okay." She goes, No, that's okay." And I said, "Oh, okay." And she said, "You just didn't get any from me yet." So I had nothing. That was brilliant. Of course, I had to buy more. So that's a great example of somebody not being deterred by an initial no and then using the softening statement. All right. So the second step in the process, then, is isolating the real reason behind what they say. So, in most cases, it's really wise for us to narrow down that reason for objecting to just one issue. So, after the softening statement that we just went through, you could use phrases and questions similar to these. So, let's take that out of the picture. Would we be the ones you choose? Let's look at this a different way. Looking at us compared to the others, what would you say would be the more comprehensive choice for you? If you didn't use that as one of your criteria, would we be the ones you'd choose? If we completely took that out of the discussion, then where would we be? Can we narrow your reason for not choosing us to this one issue? Other than that, is there any other issue that's holding you back? If I understand what you're saying, if it weren't for this, you'd move forward. Is that right? Let's be sure we're talking about the same issue here. So you're saying you'd get our program, it's just the pricing that's holding you back. Is that right? Okay. So now the next step is where you actually use those doubt-creating questions we just covered. I wish I had a magic phrase or a line or a secret sauce that you could use and the objections would just vaporize, but sorry to tell you this, but it just doesn't exist. So again, you're going to ask your questions here, designed to get them thinking about and doubting their reasons for objecting. Ultimately, you want them thinking, well, maybe there is another way to look at it. So then, after that, the next step is to make your recommendation again and ask for commitment. For example, so Mike, based on the math we just did here, it looks like your total cost of ownership would actually be less with our system since you feel it's going to give you a greater return over the longer life of the unit and you won't have that out-of-pocket maintenance expense. So given all that, let's go ahead and move forward with it. So again, what's important here is that if you just made that statement before going through the doubt creation process, technically you'd be right? Factually, but they might not be there yet emotionally, and therefore they likely wouldn't buy into the argument. They'd still be in resistant mode. All right. So now I'm going to give you a number of tips that you can use with this process. All right, and these are in no particular order. So let's give some choices in response to resistance. One of the themes, of course, of this entire program is that the only way to professionally answer objections is to get the other person talking about the reasons behind the resistance. So another effective way is to offer them choices of reasons and listen to how they respond. So for example, if somebody said, well, we're happy with our present supplier, you could say, well, I see. Is it that you're locked into a contract or that you've not found a better value yet? Or is it the quality you're getting there or the service that you like the best? If a prospect said, yeah, we're not ready to do anything yet, you might say, oh, is it because there's something that needs to happen before you buy or that you just don't see enough value in acting right away? If the prospect said, we can get it cheaper somewhere else. Oh, I see. Is price your main concern, or are you looking at service factors as well? So giving them choices allows them an easier way to voice their concerns. Even if they don't pick one of your alternatives, they'll likely answer with something of substance that you can deal with. Let's look at an alternative to a word that sometimes can come across as adversarial, and that's why. Some sales training suggests you respond with the word why when you hear some resistance or any type of objection. Now, this could be touchy since why could be a threatening word. It can imply that they're wrong and attempts to force them to justify their reasoning. Now, of course, we do want to find out the why. Well, what we should do in the sales process when we're looking for the reasons behind somebody's opinions and actions is to coax out their beliefs in a non-threatening conversational matter. So for example, if a prospect said, well, I don't think your system would work for us, instead of, oh, why is that? We might say, oh, I see. Well, what were some of the factors considered in reaching that conclusion? Or, oh, well, what led to that decision? Here's another one. If a prospect said, well, we can't do anything about the new machines until next year, you could say, oh, okay, well, what is it about next year that's going to make that a better time for you? So think of excuses and resistance that you commonly encounter. Brainstorm for non-threatening questions that will help unlock the real reasons behind their words. Try to focus on the decision and the activity and not the person. That's what we're doing here. All right, let's talk about early resistance on your calls. Now, early resistance, that's not real objections, but nevertheless, it causes calls to end quickly. So for example, well, let's take prospecting calls. Even if you do everything that I teach in my smart calling process, point by point, perfectly, of course, you're still going to get some people who respond with some variation of, eh, I'm not interested, or we're happy with who we're using. You've heard those before, right? Sure, everyone has. Now, most people just, well, they give up, they move on, and they're wasting an opportunity. I mean, come on. Isn't actually getting someone on the phone one of the hardest things to do in sales? Well, we don't want to give up at the slightest sign of resistance, which actually isn't a real objection at all anyway. It's just a reflex. It's a defensive response when someone feels like they're going to hear a sales pitch. So I have a name for these kind of reactions that sales calls tend to elicit from prospects. Resistant reflex responses, triple R's. They simply are a natural reflex for many people. It's like ducking if something's flying at your head. It's instinctive. Not much thought goes into them. They just happen. But again, what we don't want to do is reply with something goofy like, well, I wouldn't expect you to be interested at this point because you haven't heard how wonderful we are. Oh, God, yuck, right? So what should we do? Well, expect it. Don't be deterred by it, though. Prepare for it. That's what I'm going to show you how to do right now. The goal is to get the person talking, which really is the key to keeping the call alive and creating an opportunity. Getting them talking moves their mind away from their reflexive response and on to something of substance. So we do this by softening them first and then using a pattern interrupt. So let me explain. A model of communication called neuro-linguistic programming that was popularized by many self-help gurus over the past 20 years, most notably Tony Robbins. It talks about a theory and techniques called a pattern interrupt. So without causing your eyes to glaze over in boredom, let me simplify it for our purposes. When people do or say something automatically, it's called a pattern. When you do or say something that stops that pattern and gets them talking or thinking about something else, then that is a pattern interrupt. In what city were you born? That last question was a pattern interrupt, by the way. You were listening along and I interrupted you with a question that probably caused you to think about the answer or wonder if I'd gone off the deep end. But either way, using a pattern interrupt when you hear a resistant reflex response causes someone to answer a question. People are conditioned to answer questions. So the very simple process is, again, using one of those softening statements, then after hearing that resistance, use the softening statement, then ask a question, which is the pattern interrupt. So for example, if prospect said, I'm not interested, sales rep could say, oh, I see. So where are you now getting your compressors? Here's another one. Oh, we're all set. Oh, I understand. So when is your next project coming up? Here's another one. We wouldn't need that. Oh, well, how are you handling your written off receivables now? This is not difficult to execute. You simply need to anticipate the triple R's you're likely to hear, or if you've placed calls for more than one day, you've already know which ones you hear. Then you prepare your simple responses. Now, your tone plays a huge role in determining the success of this reply. You want to use a soft, almost surprised, maybe even disappointed tone of voice. By no means do you want to seem confrontational. We want them to open up and drop their shield, not feel threatened, and then just simply respond to the question. Now, you might think that at some point you might hear something like, look, what part of I'm not interested did you not get? And yeah, you might be right, but you're not going to hear that as often as you might think, though. Now, by the way, this certainly isn't going to work every time. Nothing does. However, think about this. You might at least be able to salvage some opportunities that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise. Possible sales that you can cash in on either now or in the future. Now, your return on your really tiny time investment is huge, and you've got nothing to lose, right? And you won't sound like a jerk when you use it. All right. Let's talk now about price resistance. Price resistance. Notice I didn't say real price objections. Now, if you want to deal with those, what you need to do is follow the exact same process we covered right at the beginning, using those doubt-creating questions. And as a little tip, you can blow away price objections in advance by attaching numbers to the problem or pain that they're experiencing, and also the potential payoff with a solution before you even give your price. So anytime you uncover a need or a problem or pain, you want to ask questions early on in your questioning process. How much does that cost you? How often does that happen? How much time does that take? And let them attach the numbers to it. See, what you're doing there is we're building a cost of the problem or a payoff for the solution that you're going to be able to use later in your recommendation. So therefore, you're preempting the objections from coming up. Now, price resistance and price statement comments are much different than real price objections. These are often interpreted by sales reps as signs that the person won't buy. So what they do is they cave in and they drop the price, basically giving away profits. I went into a local Chinese restaurant over by me here at lunchtime to get a takeout order from the lunch menu, and I wanted soup, and it wasn't included on the takeout menu. And the woman at the counter told me that they didn't have soup to go with the lunch specials. It was only for dining in. Well, I really wanted some hot and sour soup. So I asked her, okay, well, how can I get some soup? She pointed to the main menu and said all they had was the big dinner container for two, and it was $6. I said, okay, well, no problem. How about just filling it halfway? And you just make it for one, and you just charge me half price. She smiled and said, the soup is for two, and it's $6. Well, I bought it. That was an example of price resistance. I didn't say I wasn't going to buy the soup, right? While I was waiting out a long flight delay, I sat in one of the few empty seats available at the snack bar, which happened to be right by the cash register in the airport, and I was within earshot of most of the transactions that were going on there. And I couldn't help but take notice of this one. A customer plopped a huge bottle of water on the counter. So the clerk said, that'll be $4.89. $4.89? Holy moly, that's more than liquor. That's crazy. So the clerk sheepishly empathized and said, yeah, I know, it's pretty outrageous. Hey, you know what? You can get a smaller one for $2.50, or you can get a cup over there at the bar and you can just go to a water fountain. Guy said, oh, well, that's more like it. So a sale was just cut by 50% if he would have purchased, which he didn't. He actually went down and got the free cup. So it was completely lost. My day was so long, a new work crew came in and I witnessed a similar transaction with the new counter guy who took this guy's place after the shift change. There was a little twist here, though. So another customer walked up with the same size bottle of water. Okay, might have been the same bottle. So this counter guy said, they'll be $4.89. This customer reacted pretty much the same way. $4.89? God, that's robbery. The clerk stared at him. He was pretty emotionless. He leaned forward slightly. He paused. And then calmly, he said, well, it's the cheapest you're going to find in the airport. So the customer handed over a crisp $5 bill. End the story, full price sale. So the first counter person committed the same mistake that many businesses and sales reps are also guilty of. And what's that? It's caving in to a simple price statement. Do you ever do that? The first thirsty customer was still going to buy the water until the counter guy talked him out of it, right? He actually did talk him out of it. And notice, the customer did not say, I won't ever buy water here because your prices are too high. So he simply grumbled about the price. So just like you or I might air out a few choice words about a traffic jam, right? We still have to drive in it. We're just not happy about it at that very moment. Then we get over it. So what's the point here? There is a big difference between price comments and statements and real price objections. So again, how should we handle the real price objection? Well, you want to follow the process that we covered right at the beginning. We got to find out what the real problem is. Then we want to get them to doubt their belief with the questions. So for example, in my case, if somebody says, oh, well, I think what you're charging per day of training is too much. Now, of course, I've done this process myself. So what I do is sit down and say, why would somebody say that? Well, of course, the number one reason for most people is the value is not yet perceived high enough in their mind. And that was my fault because perhaps I didn't do a good enough job with the questions, identifying the needs, problems, pains, attaching a dollar amount to it, perhaps what they're losing every day in terms of lost sales because of not doing prospecting, because of not putting new business in the funnel. That's one thing, but that's completely different than somebody who might say, well, it's all that the committee had budgeted. Okay, that's very different than the other one. Now, there might be some value crossover there, but you can see that's a different reason. Another reason might be they had a predetermined price figure in mind based on what they heard other people pay for training. Or maybe it was based on what they saw online for a recorded training program. So you can see that if I just came back with a canned objection rebuttal at that point, all it's going to do is, well, again, it might be factually right, but it might just cause them to feel like I'm telling them they're wrong, and it never really would answer their real concern. So again, we want to go through the entire process. That's what you would do when you get the real price objection. So again, we already covered that. What I want to address right now are those price statements and comments that you hear, which causes many salespeople to start dropping their price needlessly. Okay. So these occur, of course, when somebody's already mostly sold. So they're just airing out their feeling. Now, these people don't necessarily expect a response, although they'll gladly take one if it's offered. That's a real bonus for them, right? And it could be fatal for sales reps because it opens you up to negotiations when they're not necessary, just like the guys at the airport counter. Now, to illustrate how absurd it is to react to a simple price comment, let's turn this around. If after giving your price, a prospect said, "Wow, that's a great price. I expected it to be more." You probably wouldn't say, "Oh, really? You think so? Well, let me see what I can do here. I think I'm going to raise it by 30% then, okay?" No, that's crazy. So what should we do when we're faced with a price comment? Nothing. Pause. See if they continue. Actually, this is a good tactic anytime we hear a price statement, even if you think it's resistance or a real objection. See if they continue talking. Then what you need to do is have a statement of your own ready to go. I mean, let's face it. Again, if you've been on the phone for more than a few days, you've already heard most of the price statements you're going to hear, and you should prepare your responses. Now, again, I'm not talking about objection rebuttals. Those are inane, they're insane, and they don't work because they don't deal with the real reason. I'm simply talking about something innocuous in reply to the price comment or statement. So, for example, if somebody said, "Wow, your delivery charges are higher than ABC company," a response could be, "Yes, we have an extensive tracking and quality control process." If a prospect said, "$500 for a yearly maintenance contract?" Yes, that covers any service or support calls that you're going to have all year long. Here's another one. "Man, you guys must be making a killing on those. It can't cost that much to make those." Response might be, "Well, everybody's been hit hard by materials increases this year." Then it's important that we just move on with the conversation. Don't dwell on the price comment. Let it die. So again, let me reiterate. Giving in to price statements takes money out of your pocket and your company's profits. All right, let's talk about handling stalls and delays, the "I want to think about it" comments. I remember when I was a naive, hotshot corporate sales rep just out of college, and one of my first sales managers gave me a piece of seasoned advice that I've never forgotten and always believed. He said, "Nothing will kill a deal like time." How true. With prospects and customers, today's interest and perception of that pressing problem or need often becomes tomorrow's bottom of the pile to do until it ultimately vaporizes, replaced by a new set of concerns in today's crazy busy world, right? It's like a fire on a winter night. If it's left untended, it's going to extinguish with time. So, to be successful, it's our job to keep those flames of interest roaring. So, to avoid letting time steal our sale, consider the way that it manifests itself with phrases like, "Let me think about it. I need some time," or "maybe later." So, to deal with this, let's figure out and analyze why people delay. All right. So first, well, they might actually indeed be sincere and they truly do need more time before making a decision. Fine. If so, let's find that out. Let's find out what specifically is going to happen and why the time is required. We'll get to these here in a second. Other reasons. Maybe they have no intention of ever buying from you, or worse, never making a decision of any type. We want to find that out too, quickly. Or maybe they just don't see enough urgency in acting today. It might be a simply procrastination. And you both agree a decision would be in their best interest, or you want to make sure that you both agree that a decision's in their best interest. And to do that, you want to help them take action now, since again, their perception of the urgency is will diminish as quickly as they hang up the phone with you. What we don't want to do upon hearing a stall, though, is confront them again with a slick phrase that's designed to push them into a quick decision. That only will serve to annoy somebody and maybe even cause them to come up with more rational reasons for delaying. So, just like the exercise we did earlier, the best approach is to use some well-placed questions here to get them talking, to help them turn their interest into action. So first, we want to uncover the cause of the delay. So if your reading of this situation tells you that they are indeed sincere and there is something that truly needs to happen before they buy, fine. Let's just be sure that you're all on the same page and let's help them be specific about the next action. Okay, so what you're saying is that my proposal is what you want to go with, and all you need at this point is to write up the justification so that you can present it to the acquisition manager and get the funds. Is that right? Well, let's deal with the other situations, the ones that really cause you grief and waste your time and money. And these are the ones where they're either flat out procrastinating or just yanking your chain. So here's some questions to help them open up and give you concrete issues that you can deal with or cause them to fess up and admit they're not going to buy from you. And by the way, I call that a success in this situation. So you could ask things like, well, what concerns do you still have? What's causing you to hesitate? What questions are still unanswered for you? What are you still unsure of? What is it that you're planning to consider? Or, kind of like one I gave before, you could provide choices that might help them give you a real reason for the delay. Is it the lack of reporting that's holding you back? Now, I know some people might argue that this just gives them an easy excuse to pick one that isn't true. Yeah, maybe. But like most attempts at deception, it's uncovered if we question it further. Now, if you finally conclude that this person isn't worth further short-term effort on your part, politely let them know you'll be happy to work with them when or if they make that decision. Hey, then we can move on. So for the ones who are simple procrastinators, we want to keep stoking that fire until it reaches a point where they do act. So continue questioning to make them even more uncomfortable about their need or their problem or their pain. Through questions, we want to help them feel and verbalize how much better their life would be with your product or service. So don't let that "let me think about it" or other similar delays take money out of your pocket. So move them forward or move them out. That's one of my favorite sayings. All right. So here's another one. Let's plant a seed for a callback, if again, we are going to move them out. If you ultimately determine someone isn't worth pursuing in the short term, or when you've both concluded you're not going to be doing business together today, but you'd like to keep the door open for the future, you got to say more than, "Hey, well, keep us in mind, okay?" Naturally, everyone would respond with the answer to that of, "Oh, okay." Then they forget about you before their handset hits the cradle, right? So instead, we want to create a picture for them to remember you by. Create a little mental box in which they can place you. So, for example, "Well, Pat, the next time you find yourself in an emergency without replacement parts when you need them, we'd be able to help you. Since we stock over 30,000 parts, we're likely to find what you need within minutes. If that happens, will you call us?" Or perhaps, "Well, keep in mind that we're the company that's known for having a pool of licensed tradespeople on call for temporary jobs so that when you find yourself with more work than you can handle, we'll be the ones to call. Would you do that?" Now, did you notice the commitment questions at the end of this? Those, by the way, are proven to get more positive results when you use them. All right. So sales reps waste tremendous amounts of time following up with stallers who have little intention or ability to buy. Oh, and another time and money waster is letting those same types of prospects drag the sales process on far too long. So if you follow these ideas, you're going to close more sales more quickly and spend less time with people who will never buy from you. Okay, so you're going to get a no, get it today. All right, so next, let's move along here. Let's talk about bringing up an objection before they do. Yeah, that's right. You heard that right. When I was listening to a recording of a sales rep's call in preparation for some client training, I heard him say, and right now, you might be thinking that since you're in a contract with a supplier, that might hold you back. Well, here's how some others have handled that situation. And then he proceeded to masterfully remove that possibility, that unspoken objection. So if there's an issue that always comes up as an objection, you know, the big elephant in the room, hey, it's not a bad idea to bring it up and answer it before it becomes a major issue later. So by bringing it up before they do, you clear up negative thinking early in the call. For example, a prospect might feel that your price is too high and therefore will not be able or was not going to be listening very carefully to what you're saying. However, by addressing the situation early and resolving the issue, prospect will be more open to your recommendation. So here are some ways to transition into bringing up that inevitable objection. So I bet you're asking yourself right now, you might be wondering if you're concerned about in the outstanding book, Triggers, subtitles, How to Use Psychological Triggers of Selling to Motivate, Persuade, and Influence. The author, Joseph Sugarman, said that he turned losing, and by the way, he's an advertising copywriter, really advertising genius. He turned losing products into profitable ones by airing the dirty laundry and disadvantages about products up front. And what that did for him is it reduced and often eliminated major objections to the sale. For example, he was writing an ad for a thermostat that required installation by the customer. Now, knowing that would be an objection by some consumers, including me, I'm not very technical, what he would do is he'd bring it up right away at the beginning of the ad and then resolve it by explaining the thermostat wires were on 24 volts, not enough to hurt anyone. And he pointed out the wires were color-coded and really easy to install. Anybody can do it. All right. So what are the obstacles that always arise with your products or service? So use these examples to come up with a way to admit them, explain them, and then point out your advantages. All right, here's another quick tip that's a bit unconventional. Confuse them. If a prospect is giving you a brush off and you're getting ready to end the call, maybe you're still not quite sure as to the reason behind it, but you still want to stay on the call, you might want to throw out a phrase that both confuses them, but then also makes them curious at the same time. For example, let's say a caller says this at the end of a call. Well, I'll tell you what, Ms. Prospect, one thing to keep in mind for the future, though, is the double co-op tie-in to build your store traffic. Now, the prospect might be thinking, a what? This technique helps prospects forget about their reason for not wanting to continue the conversation. Then it hints at something they might be interested in, therefore buying you more time to ask more questions and find out more about their desires going through essentially our prospect before. So for example, the caller might say, well, it's a promotion that two of your suppliers use to help fund in conjunction with a regular sale that you're holding. So anyway, let's talk about what you have coming up. All right, more quick tips here. Focus on the reasons for wanting to buy, not the resistance. So think about how you would react to this statement. Well, on the one hand, we really like your program. However, the lack of the reporting feature is going to stop us from working with you. Many sales reps would jump in and attack the objection at this point. Of course, not us, right? We'd take the other path and instead focus on what they're really interested in. All right, well, let's talk about that. So first, let's go through what you've identified as the reasons for wanting the program first. And then we want to let them talk. And of course, we're going to prompt them where necessary with questions. You'll probably find they'll talk themselves into what you have while minimizing their reason for resisting. Now, that's a much better approach than helping them focus on the objection, right? Here's a key point that's going to help you minimize objections. Don't create or invite them. A client shared an example that he heard while monitoring some calls. A customer had called them and was placing an order. And one of his questions was, well, do you have the IT 5035 cameras in stock? And the rep said, I do. But you know what? I don't know how long the extension cord is for the AC power. The caller didn't ask about the cord, right? He wanted to buy the cameras. The cord might not have been important until the rep got him thinking about it. Perhaps it was long enough, but because a seed of doubt was planted, the caller decided not to buy. Doubt can also cause inaction or fear. Here's another one. Sales rep appeared to have a sales in the bag, and the prospect was giving off buying signals, was really enthusiastic about the offer, and the prospect was speaking in terms of how he would actually use the service and how he's going to find the funds for it. Everything's going well. Then the sales rep said, oh, and another feature that I think is just great is, and he proceeded to go into a presentation on a component that the sales rep hadn't even, or that the prospect hadn't even asked about. And the prospect listened with indifference. And then the conversation tone changed. And the prospect said, well, you know what? I'm just wondering. We really don't have a need for that last component. Is there any way you could take that out and see if you could reduce the price for me? So the rep had gone from a full price sale to actually losing the sale because of a price objection that he had created. So really, the very simple and obvious lesson here is talk when appropriate. Okay. Am I suggesting you hide information that's important to the buyer? No, of course not. That'd be unethical. What I am recommending is that when you're making a recommendation, you only talk about what the other person is interested in. Don't bring up objections that weren't there to begin with. Okay. Now I'm going to end here with a bunch of rapid fire tips for you. So before writing off a prospect who you've obviously are going nowhere with, you might ask them, so would you say we'll likely never do business together? The reasoning here is it might prompt them to say, well, you know, never is a long time, which could give you a lead in to more questions. This is another one. Take each of your top five competitors and determine your main advantages over them. Then develop questions to get prospects talking about their needs in those areas. For example, you might say, oh, well, how are you now affected by the order fill rates that you're getting? To get somebody talking after they state an objection, you might simply say again, oh, tell me more about that, then get out of the way. To help the indecisive prospect move, you might ask, what would happen if you did nothing? Boy, I love that one. Actually used it the other day, and then the prospect started explaining that, well, yeah, I guess we'll just continue getting the same results we're getting. Funny how that happens, right? Use the just suppose technique. Yeah, just suppose the money was in the budget. Would you go with it then? Here's a question to ask when they're comparing you to a discounter. Well, tell you what other expenses have you considered in the long term if you went with the lower priced alternative? If a prospect says that your price savings wouldn't be large enough to switch, we've all had those, right? Ask him, well, let me ask you, how much would you have to increase sales to generate just the same net profit as the savings we provide you over a year? And you want to be prepared with the math there, okay? Make sure that that's net profit. In response to a send literature brush off, you might say, well, you know what? I'll be happy to. But let me ask you, let's say you like what you see. What's going to happen next? If budget is the problem, you could ask him, well, what have you done in other situations where there was something you wanted that could help your department, but it wasn't budgeted? How did you get it? You see, that gets them thinking about possibilities, other opportunities. We all hear, I want to shop around, right? Well, you can ask him, what would you be looking for? See, that could help clear up any misunderstandings about what you could provide, cause them to forego the shopping, and buy from you now. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. We are bumping up against time here, and I don't know if I see any questions here. Don't see many questions submitted. If you do have any questions after this, I'm going to just open this up to you. Go ahead and send it to me in an email. Send it to smartcalling@gmail.com. All right, smartcalling@gmail.com. And for now, oh, did I forget that one? Did I go through that? If somebody wants to have you call back in a few months or so, respond with, I'll be happy to. What's going to make that a better time for you? All right. Sorry, I shortchanged you on one of the tips there. Okay. So let me thank you. Let me thank you for investing your time today. The transcripts, the recordings, the slides, all will be at a page we're going to set up for you, depending on how quickly the transcriptionist will get this done. They are waiting. They are waiting for the recording so they can get this done. It should be pretty quickly, I would say, no later than tomorrow. Also, I promise you there's not going to be anything sold or offered here except more free stuff. You can get a ton of free stuff at my blog, smartcalling.com. I imagine most of you are on my email newsletter. Do check out my YouTube videos, especially the outtakes if you're not seeing those now. That alone, I think, is just worth watching if you like the funny stuff. All right, we covered tons of ideas for handling resistance and objections conversationally. If you adapt, practice, and use these, I am confident you are going to get more of the sales that might be eluding you right now. So here's to your continued sales success. I'm Art Subcheck.